Investing Simplified is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm with Bo Caldwell, CFP, and Chuck Price, founder and author of Investing Simplified, the book, and the number one bestseller, Your Retirement Made Simple. Chuck Price has been doing estate planning since 1970 and investing in retirement planning since 1975. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial show in America with a financial advisor and now a CFP, an estate planning attorney, and a CPA to answer your questions for free, and comes to you live from Portland, Oregon on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. You can contact Bo or Chuck by visiting pfgwm.com, or you can email them with a question at ask@pfgwm.com, or you can call them right now at 503-417-9595. That's 503-417-9595. And for our long distance and podcast listeners, you can call toll free at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Bo Caldwell.
Welcome into Investing Simplified. However you're listening today, thanks for making us a part of your day. Just a reminder, you can also catch the show on replay on podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Bo Caldwell, CFP, in with you today. And in the studio with me is Taylor Gattell, the KG Law Group. Hello, Taylor.
Good morning, Bo, and good morning, everybody.
Welcome back. Nice to have you back. I know we've had questions, multiple questions that have come in from listeners that in your purview, and when Kevin and Chuck and I try to answer them, we answer them with the caveat that we know enough to be dangerous. So it's great for you to be in. I think we have a great show for you all today, but as always, now is the time to pick up the phone to give us a call. Ask that question that's been keeping you up at night, 503-417-9595. You can also ask on investingsimplifiedradio.com if you'd prefer to submit that question via text. We're happy to take it that way. And I got to tell you, the market this week has just been crazy. So if you've been listening, Chuck and I have been talking about volatility. We've been talking about the increase in volatility that's going to be coming. We've talked about the recession, the downturn in the market that we think is going to be coming at some point. I don't know when. My crystal ball is broken. I use the same one Chuck does, so it doesn't work super well. But some of the things that are concerning that, you know, make us really think that there really is a chance that this will happen in the next 12 to 18 months is, one, the national debt. Chuck talks about it ad nauseum. You know, I know it's his big bugaboo, and it's something that should worry us all, that it continues to just climb, and no matter what happens, even with there was a break in it with with the trade, you know, with a little bit of the trade work that was done, so the slowdown of the growth of the national debt, but it's still over $22.5 trillion. And really, we talk about it all the time. If your company, if the CEO of your company, if you're running a private company and you were running deficits like this country does, then you'd be fired. You know, then so. I don't
hard
know
to conceptualize that number.
It's $22.5 trillion with a T, right? It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. And it just, you know, I don't know how we're going to pay that. I don't know how we're going to deal with that. The other thing that happened this last week, and you may or may not have heard, it happened earlier this year with a different set of yields, but the yield curve did what's called an inversion. And what that means is the long-term rate, so the rate that you can that you can receive for loaning money out for the long term, or that the government receives, so if you're going to borrow, at the 10-year, so to borrow money for 10 years actually got cheaper than to borrow money for 2 years. So the yield coming on, if you were to buy 10-year treasury bonds, is actually less than the yield on the 2-year treasury. So that came back and flipped itself back, so now the 10-year is a little bit higher than the 2-year, but generally that is a reliable predictor of a recession. The last 7 recessions have been predicted by a yield curve inversion. And so a lot of economists look at that as a predictor of a recession. And right now, the economy does still look pretty good. It is slowing down a little bit, but it has been plugging along pretty well. The terminology that I've heard used for it that I like is a plow horse. So it doesn't, it's not running, it's not, you know, galloping, but it is plowing along. The fundamentals look good. If you've noticed, more and more and more money is coming from foreign countries to buy our government bonds. That's what's really driving that yield down. Mm. You may, I'm sure, Taylor, you know this, but a lot of folks listening may not know, the way that a price and interest rate on a bond works is sort of like a seesaw. So as the interest rate on that bond goes up, the price goes down and vice versa. As the interest rate goes down, the price goes up. So alternatively, if we're talking about demand for something, when a lot of people want to buy something, the price goes up, right? Basic supply and demand. You have a lot of people buying a limited supply, the price will go up. So that's what's driving those yields down. That's coming from a lot of people, both from foreign countries, because Germany has near negative interest rates. Japan has negative interest rates, meaning you actually have to pay the government to borrow their money, or for them to borrow the money. It's weird. It's a very weird setup. Negative interest rates. If you want to take out a loan, then they actually have to pay you to take out the loan. You want to put your money in the bank and loan it to them in a form of a CD or a bond. You're actually paying because it's a negative interest rate. So that's why a lot of foreign money is flowing into the United States to buy our bonds, which is driving the price down.
I hadn't known how that was interacting. So that's really helpful.
Well, it's crazy, because as we continue to drive that price up on those bonds and these yields fall, but that also comes from people getting spooked by the market, right? So when people do what's called a flight to safety, they often run to government treasuries because it's long been considered the safest investment, right? Because the U.S. government has the full power and taxing authority to tax us in order to pay their debts, is the thought concept behind that.
But right.
It's not super exciting. I don't really want tax rates to go up. Doesn't make me feel a lot better about it. But so that's a big concern for people, is that we have this yield curve inversion. A lot of economists are looking at that. And you hear a lot of talk about, when is the recession going to happen? When is the downturn going to happen? I don't know. Historically speaking, it's anywhere between 5 and 18 months after the yield curve inverts and stays that way. So what a lot of times happens is that the market actually does what's called a melt up. So that means it runs up real quick right before its big downturn. It happened in 2007, 2008. It happened in, you know, at the turn of the century. Folks will remember when the dot-com bubble burst, we had this big run in money, All these stocks are going up and valuations are going crazy up, and then it's a quick downfall, right?
Are you advising your clients differently knowing this information?
That's a good question. No. So interestingly enough, we look at it, and I've talked about it on the show, the way that we look at volatility, the way that we look at recessions. So recessions are normal. Volatility is normal. A lot of people have gotten, I don't know what to call it. I'm trying to think of the word. I can't think of the word. But they've forgot about the volatility that we had, because since the financial crisis, we've basically had straight up markets.
We've got the momentum. We've kind of forgotten about those big downturns.
Or forgotten about that it's totally normal. So the way that we manage money is from a risk basis, a risk first basis, to look at what is our maximum amount that we're willing to lose. And we benchmark that against the financial crisis, against the dot-com bubble. So if markets turn like that, which they're going to do sometime between now and the end of time, that's going to happen again, right? I don't know when. But so if we're prepared for that, then we can manage our way around that. We also have a strategy for market volatility, because most of our clients are approaching retirement or are in retirement. And retirement is it's a one-shot deal. You got to get it right. Right? You get one attempt at it. So we want to make sure that no matter what the market is doing, we have an all-weather portfolio, right?
Got your safety net. You're not going to be out on the streets or something else if it goes down, but enough in the market that you can still maybe benefit.
Exactly. That's the goal of it. And, you know, that may sound like I'm saying, hey, I'm guaranteeing that, you know, the one thing I can guarantee in my business, and I tell that to folks all the time, is the one thing I can guarantee is at some point your portfolio is going to lose money. That's the one thing we can guarantee, right? So the key is, how much money, you know, can we afford to lose? Can we stomach losing? Those are the two big things, right? How much can you handle, and how much can your portfolio afford? But also we have strategies in place so that we have a plan for when the portfolio loses money. So the idea is not necessarily that we're advising differently, because I don't know what the time of the market is, right? So my crystal ball doesn't work. The idea is, the difference is, instead of traditionally a lot of brokers who are out there are saying, hey, look at all the money I can earn you. Look at what my portfolio did over the last 10 years. And it's showing, hey, I'm beating the market and I'm up and I'm up and I'm up. And the question is, it's not how much are you up, it's how much are you keeping, right? So people say, well, I'm just going to invest in the S&P 500. And that can be a great plan, especially for people, you know, our age. You've got 30 years till retirement. So you can, if you can hold on to it, you're going to be pretty, you're going to do really well. If you're young and you have a long 20, 30 year time period and you can hold on to it through the ups and downs, you're going to do really well. But unfortunately, what happens, particularly with, if we use last October as an example, so if you started last October and went till now, the S&P 500 is actually just barely positive, right? So in terms of the return on there, now the return on there is on paper still, unless you've sold at any point during that time, right? So just barely positive. So now people think, okay, year to date, I'm way up because I'm up 20%. And the S&P 500 was up over 20% over the last few months up until this last month, right? There was up 20 something and then it's lost a bunch, right? You've lost almost 25 or 30% of the gains that you had so far this year.
So when are you benchmarking it?
Basically? Exactly. It's big, based on looking at, you know, time frames and how do you benchmark. The idea is operating. So the way that we operate from is how much money, if we've done a plan, right? I think I've done my puzzle analogy with you before, right?
I don't know that you have.
So if you're doing a puzzle, what's the first thing you do when you're doing a puzzle?
Look at the picture.
Exactly. So, you know, I should have thought about it.
I'm talking to
an estate attorney. I should have thought about that. You always are looking at the picture because you've got, most people will answer, I'll do the corners first. I'm going to look for match colors. I'm going to, you know, do the outline, the borders first and then work inward. And those are all effective strategies. But the first thing you do is you look at the picture because you don't know what you're going for. So when we manage money for folks, we start with a plan. Like, hey, let's build out our plan. Where are we going? What are we trying to get to? Then we analyze where we are, and then we kind of build it out from there. And if we only have to average X amount of return, then that's what we're managing for. Not trying to shoot the lights out, not trying to get 15-20% on the upside, because if we're getting 20%, 30% on the upside, where you'll see people that say, "Yeah, I'm killing it, I'm beating the market," but how did they do in December of last year? Right? How did they do over the last week where the market is super volatile? And if they're trying to time the market, you hear people who are trying to be tacticians is the term, or they're trying to time the market. A lot of times they'll see the market start going down and they read their model says the momentum is shifting. It's going down and, you know, yada, yada. And maybe in December they got out only down 6 or 7% and felt pretty good about themselves. But then so far the rest of the year up in January till now, they missed out on the upside. So you have to be right twice, right? If you're trying to time the market, you got to be right on the down and you got to be right on the up. So generally speaking, we try to stay to the plan, stick to the strategy. And if we can build a strategy that makes sense, managing for risk and having a risk adjusted return, then that's a win, because the idea is not, you know, for folks that we work with, the idea is not to make people rich. It's to make sure they never run out of money and can live the lifestyle they want in retirement, right? And can hit the goals that they have, which, if they have goals of leaving a legacy, that's where they come talk to you, which after our break, we'll come back and Taylor's going to talk a little bit about how to leave a legacy in her segment, Covering Your Assets with Taylor Cattell. So if you have questions about your estate planning, about your taxes, about your financial investments, please give us a call, 503-417-9595. But we'll be right back after this quick break with Investing Simplified.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, it can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
It's time to learn to cover your assets with Taylor Cattell of KG Law Group. online at kglawgroup.com. Have a legal question? Call in now at 503-417-9595. Now, here's Taylor Cattell.
Hello and welcome back. I wanted to spend a few minutes talking about different charitable questions that I get in the estate planning context. So I know it's been a couple of weeks since I've been here. Again, I'm Taylor Cattell. I'm with KG Law Group, and I focus my entire practice on estate planning, probate, trust administration, all things related to the exciting topics of incapacity and death. So when I do talk with people about that big picture that we're talking about with the puzzle, part of it is, what's your plan for giving back? And some people say, my plan for giving back is making sure that my kids get taken care of, and that is fine. Some people say, I want to support my church. Some people say, I want to make sure that animals never go without being spayed or neutered. Whatever it is, people have different thoughts and intentions, but I can't, I'm surprised at how many people come in and say, I want to give back somehow, and I don't know how. I'm not necessarily in a position or attached to a certain organization that is a natural fit for me to give. So what do you recommend? Other people will say, gosh, I don't know that these charities that I currently contribute to, they're smaller. I'm in a more rural community. It's because I have this direct involvement, but I don't know if they're going to be around. I don't know how they're going to deal with this. And so I wanted to spend a few minutes just going through a couple ideas on, if you are so inclined, what are some options for charitable giving? One thing, a tool that's really, really helpful is something called the Charity Navigator. If you were to just go online and look at the Charity Navigator, you can find all sorts of information about charitable organizations. Are they actually a charitable organization? How are they taxed? Are there, you know, what are their tax IDs? There's what's their annual budget? There's a lot of information out there that is freely available online. So if you have any questions about the legitimacy of an organization, that's a really good place to look. Obviously, looking into their website and seeing if they're been around consistently, calling their director, how big is their board. Those are all signs of a good, healthy organization when you've got an actual board, you've got minutes to look at things like that. There are also some really interesting things called donor-advised funds. One of the two biggest organizations here in Oregon for charitable giving, one is called the Ford Family Foundation, and they do a great job of especially focusing on the rural communities in Oregon. The other, a lot of us have heard of, called the Oregon Community Foundation. The Oregon Community Foundation is a really interesting creature. I'm not on its board. I'm not trying to promote it. I'm not attached to it.
Not affiliated with them. You're
not
getting
affiliated.
Your checks in the mail from them.
Yeah, right,
here.
Right. But a lot of my clients love working with them because they are basically a middleman. You can set up a donor advised fund with the Oregon Community Foundation, and they will do all that middleman work, almost like a private foundation, and funnel the money to the charities that you want to benefit. So if you wanted to benefit a handful of smaller charities, what you can do is you can set up a fund. You can put as much money or pledge as much money as you want. Put your letter of intent together describing how exactly you want your money to be used. And then Oregon Community Foundation will work with you and with your state and whoever your fiduciaries, your representatives are, to make sure that your plan is followed. If an organization in your list doesn't exist at the time of your death, then they can look for what is the most closely aligned that is still a nonprofit organization that gets you those tax benefits of the charitable giving. So there's some really interesting tools out there. I get some questions from my higher net worth clients about setting up private foundations. Private foundations are really complicated from a tax perspective, from a legal perspective. Doing everything exactly according to the books to make sure that you get the tax benefits you're looking for, it's really expensive.
Right. That was the thing I was hearing, cha-ching,
yeah.
When you're saying all these things you have to do, and you have to set it up yourself, not just expensive, but time-consuming, right?
Absolutely.
The benefit.
And the management.
Right. The benefit, from what I understand, with the donor-advised fund is, there is a cost to it because you have to have these foundations that help you, but
right.
It's a lot less front end work and a lot less ongoing work for you as the donor.
Yes.
As opposed to a private family foundation. You have more control in the private family foundation, but with the donor advised fund, you get a lot of the same benefits, right? And it's too bad Kevin's not here. I'll ask him to talk a little bit about the taxation of it next week, but the real benefits of giving that 501c3 charity donation without having to have a lawyer that's making sure everything is set up with your foundation every year.
Multiple lawyers,
right? And your accountant's got to do, you know, that's the biggest complaint I get from clients.
If you're the Gates or the Zuckerbergs of the world, then go with a private foundation. Do it right. But for the rest of us mere mortals, having a situation where someone else, I mean, the Oregon Community Foundation, this is what they do. Mm-hmm. So as opposed to those of us who would have to learn how to do that, we're basically just having them do what they do and be the middleman for it. But the other piece of it is that you can also benefit multiple organizations. And that's a really neat thing. So if you said, gosh, I've got all these different thoughts about where my money should go, and especially those smaller organizations that really need that money, that don't get the bigger donations from the bigger hedge funds and whoever else is
from the
really
Gates
looking,
and
the
Zuckerbergs of the world.
Right. If you're looking at some of those smaller organizations, and you know, Oregon is not a giant state, right? We're not dealing with the San Francisco and the Seattle and some of the charities that are there. So if you want to keep your money local, that's also another good way to think about it. So I guess I'm working from the premise that we all know that charitable giving saves you on taxes.
Right. Yeah. To a certain extent, So I'm gonna put the caveat in here that I'm not Kevin, I'm not a CPA, but generally, if you're donating cash, I think you get about 50 or 60% of your adjusted gross income that you can write off. You can go up to that amount in terms of donation, and then if it's appreciated securities, I believe it's 30%. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah, but I would love to have Kevin.
That may be old rules, but
yeah, and I think of it from a post-death standpoint primarily.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
And so a lot of where I'm looking at it is Oregon estate taxes.
Yeah,
federal estate taxes and Oregon estate taxes are different exemption amounts. The federal is so high now, over 11 million, that very few of us will deal with federal estate tax planning without having your own personal advisor who's already working on all of that. But Oregon, the exemption amount is only $1 million.
Right. So it's
not portable. So basically you and your spouse each have $1 million, but you can't take your spouse's and just assume you've got two. It's two separate things that you have to do some fancy legal footwork to actually shelter a full $2 million. And so it's tricky, especially in when you have to pay the tax if you're married. But we could spend hours on that piece of it. But the long and short of it is that there's basically you save all that estate tax 10 to 16%. By giving to a charity over that $1 million.
Okay.
So depending on what your overall estate plan looks like, one of the strategies can be, well, maybe we do a portion to charity to directly reduce your estate tax liability. And there's a couple ways that you can do that. One is just in your estate plan. But and there's some creative ways that you can think about it that way. Some folks do percentage. And just say, you know what, 1%, 10%, 12%, whatever is comfortable with whoever else you want to benefit and whatever causes you have. Some people treat a charity that they feel very comfortable with, or perhaps their donor advised fund, as another child. So if they have three kids, they divide their estate into four. And that fourth is that charity. And I think that's a really interesting way to think about it. Now, if you have one kid and 50% of your estate is going to the charity, that might be a little bit much for you,
right?
Especially if you have grandkids or other people that you want to benefit. But I've seen that strategy be an interesting one for folks to feel like that's how they're treating their estate plan.
Well, the biggest thing is, right, is what do you want to do with your money, right?
Yes.
That's the big conversations you have to have with people, even more so than we do, is when you're leaving that legacy behind, what's more important, because it's your money. So, don't feel like, you know, you said 50% to one kid and 50% to the charity may be something that, you know, like you said, some folks believe particularly strongly in that, and that doesn't make it wrong. It's their money. You've earned it. Right.
So. Right. And what is it that will make you feel like your work paid off? Cause you earned that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you earned the ability to leave a legacy. And how will that legacy be remembered? What is it that's important to you? Some folks feel strongly about scholarships, right? That's a very common place where you feel like your legacy is ongoing. So I want to give this amount to this, you know, my alma mater, but it's going to be a scholarship in my name so that people remember I cared about the school newspaper or I cared about, you know, whatever this activity was.
Sure.
And so that's a very common way to feel like, gosh, I'm really leaving my mark on something. Other people say, gosh, I really want to be silent about it. I just want to, in the background, know that I made this impact. And that comes down also to what size of charity are you aiming for? If you have, let's just say, $50,000 that you want to give to a charity, if that $50,000 does go to something like the Gates Foundation, it's a little bit more of a drop in the bucket.
Sure.
If that $50,000 goes to an organization whose annual budget is $100,000,
right,
you have just become, you know, the sustaining donor of that organization. So it's really something, I guess I'm pushing a little bit for the smaller charities.
Sure.
Because I think they're often overlooked in how you can leave a legacy and how you can make a difference. But another piece of it too, when I'm talking with folks about leaving a legacy, when I'm talking with them about their kind of grand plans, their vision, their values, don't overlook the lifetime gifting. Right. It is really it's somewhat easier to plan for legacy gifting after your death because you're not going to need that money anymore.
Right.
Right. You know that you'll have kind of lived and be able to use it during your lifetime. But you see a little bit more appreciation and a little bit more fruits of your labor during your life. So there is a $15,000 annual exclusion amount where you don't have to, you know, file a gift tax return and things like that. There are other tax benefits during your lifetime to think through that I think Kevin would be the most equipped to go through right. The actual benefits of that. But another piece of it is using your IRA or using any other beneficiary designation. And that can be, there are some exemptions for during your lifetime using IRAs, I believe if you're over 70 and a half. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah. So Kevin's talked about that a couple of times, and we have a listener who's called in to share his experience and his positive experience with it as well, that basically you take your RMD and donate that straight to a charitable organization. So it goes straight from your IRA to the charitable organization, and then you have to take the RMD out, right? Mm-hmm. So then you don't have to claim that on your taxes. From what I understand, basically you take that $20,000 RMD, it goes straight to you know, Southwest Portland Animal Shelter. I don't know if that's a thing. I'm just pointing out the window. And they take that money and they're able to, or to your, you send it to your church
and
it's income tax free. And you can take it out and remove it. Basically, you're removing it from your estate, kind of similarly, like you were just talking about with the lifetime gifting. If we could carve this out and move it over there, plus support the charity while you're living. And especially for those folks who only are taking the required minimum distributions because they are required. Right, then maybe they don't actually need to take it out. Then they're utilizing that effect to effectively lower their income tax rate.
Right. Well, that makes a ton of sense. And you can still do that upon your death as well, as far as setting up your beneficiary designation so that a charity gets a portion of it. And basically that all goes tax-free. So it's a huge, huge benefit from your estate. And it's also a nice tool to make sure that whatever your charitable intentions are followed upon your death. And it doesn't necessarily have to match exactly your estate plan. So if your will says everything goes to my kids, you can still have your beneficiary designation be different and say this portion of my IRA is going to go to a charity or this percentage and the rest of it can go to my kids in this fashion or wherever else I want it to go. So it's a neat way. I think a lot of folks, it's very important to know that your beneficiary designations are coordinated with your estate plan. But having them be different isn't always wrong.
Right. Just to reiterate for folks who may have not heard you talk about it before or don't know, the beneficiary designation trumps the will,
yes.
Right? So the beneficiary is king in that situation.
Exactly right. So anything, basically, they're treated as a contract. And anything that passes by operation of law, whether that's joint ownership or beneficiary designation, or sometimes called a pay on death designation or transfer on death, POD and TOD, any of those are basically going to trump whatever your will says or whatever your revocable trust says. So it's really important. A lot of folks overlook that and think, well, I've done an estate plan, so everything's taken care of. Not necessarily. And there are some really terrible stories of prior beneficiaries that weren't changed and updated. So check your beneficiaries wherever you are. And usually I say, let's have it match your estate plan. But there are frequently times when it doesn't.
Right. So we want to make sure, that's just a caveat. I'll get up my soapbox before we take our break here, and make sure you give a shout to your advisor, to whoever's managing your funds, to whoever's managing your money. If you have these, you know, if it's in an IRA, if it's in a qualified account, if it's in your company 401k or your 403b plan, make sure that those beneficiaries have been updated and that they have the correct information, because you may have set it up when you started, you've had multiple children since then, or you've gotten a divorce, or you've gotten remarried, or any of these things.
Right.
And it can be a real hassle if your ex-wife or your ex-husband is still the beneficiary on your account and you don't realize it.
That's by contract. So they're going and think back to your very first job. It's amazing how many people set up their own parents as their beneficiary when they got that first job as a firefighter when they were 19.
Right.
And then they forgot that they had that little policy. And their parents are gone, and now their spouse and children are going, I have to go through probate to get that?
Right. They don't get to receive it. Yeah, that's no fun. So we're going to take a quick break here. We'll be back with more from Investing Simplified. Thank you for listening.
Legal matters are never easy, but they are especially difficult when they involve the most important people and aspects of your life. This is Taylor Cattell, founding partner of KG Law Group. It's important to have an attorney who cares about your unique circumstances and knows how to get the outcome that is best for you. At KG Law Group, we specialize in estate planning and family law, including wills, trusts, powers of attorney, guardianship, and divorce. At KG Law Group, we provide both expertise and compassion as we guide you through the complex legal landscape. We balance knowledge of the law with exemplary client service. Whether you're reacting to a crisis or planning for the future, we are here to help. If you need legal advice, give us a call today and schedule a consultation at 503-878-8948. That's 878-8948. Or visit us online at kglawgroup.com. That's kglawgroup.com, serving Oregon and Southwest Washington. KG Law Group, your family, your legacy.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. However you made us a part of your day, thank you for listening. If you're just tuning in, I'm Bo Caldwell, CFP, here in studio with Taylor Cattell, the KG Law Group, here to answer all those estate planning questions, or I should say, it's better to say those questions of your estate. I don't know. It's just trying to play with words. But if you have a question that's been keeping you up at night, whether or not it's about estate planning, if it's about charitable giving that we've been talking about, if it's about financial planning, any of those questions, pick up the phone, give us a call, 503-417-9595. Taylor, you know, we were talking about RMDs, the required minimum distributions, and donating those to charity. Chuck and Kevin were talking last week, and we actually had a caller call in, and she got cut off, so I wanted to make sure we reiterated the strategy they were talking about. But you may be familiar with the RMD situation when people are taking their RMDs, similarly to doing the required minimum to a charity. A strategy that Chuck and I have employed a lot is taking in-kind distributions from your IRA if you have stock positions. And the reason you do that is because the best part of owning individual stocks is when you sell it, because you've made money. It's not income, it's capital gain. Right? So that's taxed at a much lower rate, possibly zero, depending on your income. And when it pays dividends, that's at a preferential treatment as well. If they're qualified dividends, that's at a maximum rate of 20% rather than your income tax rate, which could be 30 plus, you know, plus whatever you pay in state income tax. But when you take, if you were to have that stock appreciate in your IRA and then you were to sell it and take the cash out, that's taxable income, right? That's just regular income. So what a lot of people do is when they take their RMD or when they take a distribution from their IRA, they do it in kind so that way you keep that stock. We have, I'll just use Apple because it's, you know, easy and everybody knows Apple, right? So I have this Apple stock that's appreciated. And it's, you know, it's worth $100,000. Well, that's a big number. It's worth $10,000 now. We do the distribution, pay the income tax on the $10,000. Now I own the Apple stock in my taxable account. And if it grows to $20,000 over the next 10 years, when I sell it, that $10,000 difference is capital gain instead of ordinary income. Whereas if I left it in the IRA, it grows to that $20,000. Then I take it out. It's now $20,000 of earned income.
Interesting.
Does that make sense? So the reason that people do that in kind is twofold. One is to get those beneficial tax treatments. The other is a lot of times, and people don't realize that their brokers are doing this, and they really shouldn't, but a broker will say, well, we'll just sell the Apple in the IRA, and then we'll distribute it, and then we'll buy it back in our taxable account. But if you have a broker that's charging a commission, they get a commission on both sides.
Right.
So if we look at it from the perspective of why complicate it, so Chuck and I don't be a paid commission when we're making trades for folks. We do a fee-based approach. So it wouldn't matter to our clients if they were to sell it inside of the IRA, then move it out, then buy it again in the taxable account. But why add that complication and the different tracking methods? Why not keep it simple and just distribute the Apple stock? And now you have that Apple stock in your taxable account. And when you do sell it because you need it for income, it's a capital gain rather than ordinary income. Or hypothetically, like we've been talking about, if we continue to have this volatility in that Apple stock, instead of going from 10 to 20, goes from 10 to 5. If it's inside your IRA, nothing happens, right? But if it goes from 10 to 5 and then we were to sell that, we get to recognize a loss.
Right.
So you don't get to do that inside the IRA. So that's, I just wanted to reiterate, we had a listener that reached out last week, wanted to reiterate that strategy. If you have questions about that strategy or about gifting your RMD, give our office a call. We actually have a caller on the line. Looks like Dwight has a question about giving money to charity. Hello, Dwight.
Oh, hi. So here's my scenario. I have a couple of life insurance policies. So, and I thought, well, there's two charities that I really like. So when I go, you know, to the next, wherever I'm going, anyway, you never know. Anyway, okay, so I don't know how to set this up because, example, I want to give to both these charities, but I want it distributed monthly. So, you know, like an ongoing type distribution, because that I can earn money on, you know, the principal can be earning some interest or investment, whatever. Who handles the distribution of this? The bank, my heirs, my children, or the charities?
Are you saying that after you pass away, you would want to set up basically
an ongoing? Let's say I want to give a certain charity X number of dollars a month ongoing instead of one big sum. Who would handle that distribution? Do you follow what I mean?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's a couple of different ways that you can structure it. The most secure could potentially being setting up some kind of trust within your estate plan and having the person that you designate to be the trustee. But there are some caveats, and obviously this would take a much more full discussion if I were actually advising you. So take this with a grain of salt because we haven't talked numbers or charities or any of those. But another piece of it that I see folks do is really have a good conversation with the charity itself on what your intention is and whether what you want is going to be as helpful as you think it might and whether it's going to be administered the way that you want it to. So sometimes by putting together things like that donor advised fund I was talking about or working with the charity and having your intent clearly stated, you can work within the charity to set up what you want, but in a way that practically speaking is really going to happen. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, I just want to make sure that, you know, the fund itself, I mean, the amount of money stays kind of in a hole and what's in investment and interest is drawing off of that to give to these two charities.
So, yeah, Dwight, if I understand, basically the thought would be conceivably, okay, you pass away, we'll just use easy math, right? This $100,000 life insurance policy goes into a fund that then we're going to invest that $100,000, and if it earns basically we can earn 4% interest on a 30-year treasury or something. And so that 4% is what goes each year to the charities. That's kind of what you're
thinking about? Distributed monthly and stuff. Yeah.
Right.
So it would be I have children. So whoever I designate to handle this, they would be the one to handle it then, huh?
Right. So if you set up, and Taylor, correct me if I'm wrong, we set up inside your estate plan, there is a trust. This There's a testamentary trust, which testamentary means after you pass away.
Yep, you nailed it.
See, I win. But the testament.
So is that something I have to go to a lawyer and have set up?
Definitely. This is complex enough that it really needs to be with a thoughtful, you know, it's not something that you should do online yourself. It definitely takes
certain... No, I don't try to do anything myself anyway. Okay. Well, I, that's why professionals are there. I do what I do, and they do what they do.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much. I enjoy your show, too, a lot.
Yeah, Dwight, though, I want to mention also that since you've got the charities in mind directly, I would make sure that you communicate with those charities that you want to benefit, because they may have some ideas that are a little simpler and a little easier to make sure
you're a little less expensive.
Exactly. And so there's a lot of options, and there's a lot of ways to get creative when you're working with the charity itself. And then there's other ways that we can do it on the back end, so to speak, to make sure that what you want is secure. It's going to be followed to the best of
I appreciate
your ability.
That. Thank you very much.
You betcha.
You're
Thank you for the call. That was a great question. People ask that a lot. You know, in your experience, is the having a trust, that's generally why you have that rather than a will, right? Is so that way there can be laid out specifics on how you want things managed or things done.
Right, but what I see happen, so there's a couple different types, there are hundreds of types of trusts.
Sure.
But the two main distinguishing factors are, is it a revocable living trust, something that exists right now, or is it, as you properly identified, a testamentary trust, something that exists after you pass away? So it's not uncommon to have trust within trust and trust within trust. So you have your revocable living trust that exists now, but you might establish a trust for your spouse, a trust for your kids, a supplemental needs trust, a trust for the charity. Those could all be, you know, four different trusts within one trust. So it gets complicated when you say, well, what does the trust do? And that's why it's important to talk to a lawyer to say, I want to make sure I understand what are the implications and what are the issues here. But what I see happen on the practical kind of back end, so when someone comes in for a trust administration, so if someone has passed away, what do we do now? And I've got the kids or the brother or sister or whoever in my office saying, what am I supposed to do? Here's what the trust says. It can be hard to fulfill that intent, right? If it's very clear, even if it's really clear, when we talk with a charity or when we talk with the beneficiaries, it's not as helpful or realistic as that person might have thought. And so part of my goal with estate planning is not just what's the big picture goal, but how do we actually make sure that that happens?
Right. Make sure it's followed through.
Right. Because that's your expectation, right? You put together the plan, not just so that they have some general idea of what you think, but because you want that to be followed. So how do you make sure that that can be followed? And doing that work ahead of time, talking with the charity about, well, what are the options? Do you have something set up already that if I donate and kind of earmark it for this foundation, how is that money used? Is that already building interest and having the income spin off to help ongoing programs? Because if the goal is to have it continue as a lasting gift and build that income, they may have a foundation already that's doing that. So how do you make sure, are you comfortable with that? If not, we can still set up that other option.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. And that's a great question. A lot of people have concerns about that. And I think a lot of people have concerns that setting something up like that is overly expensive on the front end. And I usually tell people it's more expensive on the back end.
Yeah.
If your heirs have to take care of it. It really eats into that giving that you're trying to do. So,
and they don't know exactly what you wanted. And so if the stress that your family feels or that your whoever you've named to be that responsible person to follow your intent, if you're not there to answer those questions, well, did you really mean? I mean, you asked some great clarifying questions for Dwight. And if we were just dealing with black and white paperwork, we may not be able to clarify some of that.
Might not be able to know. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's asking the questions. That's why working with a professional.
Yep.
So that's why they should give your office a call or drop you an email, and you can help answer those questions like Dwight had. So we're going to take our last break here. We're going to come back. Taylor and I are going to continue talking about some issues that we've had with our clients that we see happening out in the world. But if you, like Dwight, have a specific question, we'd much rather hear from you and hear answer the questions that you specifically want to have answered. So give us a call, 503-417-9595. We'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. And we've got about 10 minutes left here that, you know, I'm going to fill, you know, with my gas baggy self, you know, talking about things that are important to me. But if you'd like to hear about things that are important to you, please pick up the phone, give us a call, 503-417-9595. So we were talking about charitable giving, talking a lot about, you know, taking distributions. One thing I want to mention before we get back into it, next week's show, we have a very exciting special guest. We have a PERS expert that's going to be in with Chuck and Kevin next week. So Taylor and I will not be here, but Chuck and Kevin and our PERS expert will be in. So if you have questions, if you are a PERS member, if you are thinking about how to do your distributions from your PERS, PERS is a super, super complicated system. So learning the ins and outs is real difficult. So make sure you tune in next week to listen about the PERS expert and give us a call if you have questions for him as well. And we'll do our best to answer those. So we have actually have John on the line who has a question about a trust. Hello there, John.
Hello. Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question. I've been working with my Asian clients on their trust, and we have it all in order. They have a duplex or two duplexes that they own in California that they've invested in a long time ago, and it's in a partnership. So my parents are 50% owners of the property, and their partners are the other 50%. And they own these two duplexes. They own them 50-50. So we're concerned about when my parents pass, and that goes to their children. How is that going to create an issue in terms of, because the intention of the children is to sell the property. And so it seems like is there a way to potentially claim, you know, one of the duplexes to, you know, half of that partnership and then the other duplex to the other half so that it makes that cleaner and doesn't involve the other family and that other side of the partnership? Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, normal lawyer disclaimer that since we are not talking specifics here, this is just very broad kind of legal information. So there's a number of different issues that could come up here, both with the California to Oregon, right, different states, and also the community property laws in California versus Oregon, because it sounds like both your parents are still living. So there's some real state law differences, and it would be, are your parents Oregon residents now?
They are Oregon residents.
Okay. So they, it sounds like they, or, you know, you as a family may want to talk with, an Oregon attorney, but also have, you know, a touch with a California attorney to go over some of the specifics related to the California partnerships and the property and some of the an accountant who is going to understand the nuances between those two, because there could be some real difference in basis and the step up in basis on the death of the first parent.
Right.
So just flagging that issue for you. I generally speaking would wholeheartedly support you simplifying the situation somehow during your parents' lifetime while they're here to negotiate that. But there's going to be a number of different pieces, you know, mainly negotiating with the other partners, but also taking a look at that partnership agreement. If it's held in a partnership, if it's an LLC, what does that operating agreement say? That gives you the baseline, right? If the operating agreement says that upon the death of you know, that interest, it automatically is passed according to their estate plan versus there's a minority interest reduction in the value and it gets automatically sold to the existing partners. There's a lot of typical language and especially older partnership agreements, right. That give a real advantage economically to the existing partners to buy out the rest of that interest. So it can be very complex, and I don't know if the partners are the same age as your parents, but it could.
Yes, they are, and it was an agreement that they, they're friends, longtime friends, and they invested in this property, I think, back in 79.
Wow,
and so, I don't think that they even have, a real, operating agreement or a structural document, if you will. So,
sure.
So I guess I'm, it sounds to me that I could reach out with that, Taylor, to VDU potentially, that in your office, that you could, that's something that you could assist and help direct us with working with a California attorney.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to help. And it happens all the time. I'm actually originally from California. And so having a California attorney to consult with, since I'm not licensed in California, would be incredibly helpful, I think, in your situation. But we would have to dig a little deeper, having your parents on board. But this is something that, it's not your standard, let's just put together a will package. We might have to chase some information on this kind of a thing. And one of the things, not just for you, but for all the listeners out there who might have something that they're looking at that's a little bit complex, just like Bo said earlier, this is the kind of thing that even if it's more expensive to chase that information now, it's going to be so much harder if one or both of your parents were to pass away to try to retroactively accomplish what you're trying to accomplish now.
Right, and that's their intent here, and I've been trying to do some legwork for them, but have not had much success. There's also issues of like Proposition 13, property tax issues and all of that.
There's a lot of layers there.
Right. Okay, well, I'll call your office, and then maybe we can connect and then get a plan from there.
Thanks, John. Appreciate you calling. Good questions.
Thank you.
I don't want to call it deja vu, but it's kind of funny. I was going to talk to you about a similar question from a client that came in similar with a family partnership situation. Now his is less complex than this. That's why I was so glad you're here. If John had asked me that question, I'd have been like, you need to call the attorney. I mean, I know enough to be dangerous about it. Right. But there's issues with, like he said, with property tax, with realization of the tax. And then how is that allocated to each of the partners? And especially if it is, you find a lot of times with those older, with folks that just, they, with the best of intentions, you go into it with friends. It's the way that you can kind of buy these investment properties, and you guys are getting income. But it's how has the income been recognized over the last, 50 years? He said about 1970 or so. So there's probably a significant amount, definitely a significant amount of capital appreciation in those properties. So how to do that. And I'm glad that you brought up the sale of it to, a lot of times there'll be a first right of refusal or they have to set a buy sell agreement that maybe it sounds like John said, it sounds like maybe they don't have a lot of those things
for better and for worse.
Right.
It cuts both ways. Right.
Right.
But exactly right. There's a lot. There's a potential in the estate planning world to kind of cut off your nose to spite your face and make estate planning decisions that really hurt you income tax wise.
Right.
Right. And at this point, the income tax consequences are much more significant economically than the estate tax consequences. And so it's more about, in thinking about complex issues like this, it's more about thinking through the logistics of it. Mm-hmm. How do we deal with the logistics? How do we make sure all the documents are in writing? But how do we make sure that all happens without doing a long-term mistake, right, that would potentially cause this economic harm where you don't get the step up in basis,
right,
or you don't get the benefit, that you've built over time. You end up paying all these taxes right up front and looking at it and going, okay, well, it's simple upon my death, but I just spent however many doing this now. So how do you get both of those?
Yeah. I mean, it's that's really tells you why you need to work with a professional. And John mentioned it. And if folks want to get a hold of you when they need to work with a professional, Taylor, how do they do that?
Taylor Cattell with KG Law Group, 503-878-8948.
Perfect. And you can get a hold of Chuck or myself at 503-253-3000. You can also reach out to us at Bo, B-O, at pfgwm.com, or Chuck at pfgwm.com. We'd love to sit down with you, give you a complimentary review of your current situation, get you a draft financial plan, get that picture on your puzzle box going for you. We have East Side and West Side locations in Portland, so give us a call. We'd love to chat with you. Thanks for listening to Investing Simplified.
Navigating through today's financial investment world can seem pretty scary. Now, here's the good news. Chuck Price, president of Price Financial Group Wealth Management, introduces a new revolutionary concept that will change how you invest now and in the future. It's called Asset Lock. Asset Lock monitors your investment accounts 24/7, 365 and alerts you when action needs to be taken. And now, Chuck Price offers Asset Lock. At Price Financial Group Wealth Management, we believe all our clients deserve to have Asset Lock monitoring their accounts. So call Chuck today or online at pfgwm.com and learn how you can get Asset Lock on your accounts today for free. Price Financial Group Wealth Management, because the smart investor knows what you don't know can hurt you.
Simplify.
Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000 or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.